Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 14, delivered on October 12, 2015. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, Review for Exam 1. Start with a few technicals on it. Do not bring a calculator. Do not bring a smartphone or a computer. You can't use them. It wouldn't be worth your while to have them anyway. There are no math calculations on this exam. That doesn't mean that there is not a need to know some formulas, possibly, so that you could answer some questions, but there are no calculations on this test at all. Also, you are permitted to bring a 4x6 information card to the exam, a 4x6 information card. Someone asked, can we put write on both sides of it? Yeah, I'm not going to go around and say, do you have a blank backside? Don't write on the edges of it, though. Now, technical details of this exam. This is writing. This is the part of a course where a machine can't do it. No machine can read good writing. I am, as I've told you before, I'm not a grammar Nazi. I am the grammar Gestapo. When I say write me a sentence, that means a complete sentence, proper punctuation, spelling. You lose credit on each question. Every time you make a mistake, if you don't write a complete sentence, you lose a point right there. And then the comma splices don't do that. Now, when I say in one sentence, you write one sentence. Don't try to ram five or six together with little commas. Don't do that. If I say in two sentences, generally, yeah. But on this exam, you can use two sentences. Yeah. You probably would prefer pencil, because if you make a mistake with a pen, then you're going to be scratching out things, and that doesn't look pretty, and we want pretty. But a pencil, as long as it's a dark lead on it. And don't write micro print. I've noticed some people think that they're cool if they can. This one exam, I was so disappointed because I didn't quite need my scanning electron microscope to read it. Say what you have to say to me and be done with it. Most of these questions take one sentence. Two sentences, you should begin to worry that you're going too far with what you're saying to me. These are straight answers, and this is where I'm beginning to prepare you as professionals. When you're asked a question, don't give an essay, give an answer. And when you're asked a question, tell me what I told you to say. Don't go off on some thought of your own. Don't ever start a sentence with I feel, I believe, or I think. Just say what you have to say. In business, we don't care what you feel. That's a sign of weakness. I feel that the answer is, no, don't do that. Just say professionally what you want to say. If you don't know the answer, don't try the question. You'll have six questions, answer five of them. Don't answer six and say, well, you pick out my best ones, teacher. No, that just rotates my ass when you do that. Just put five answers to five questions. Choose five of the six. And again, complete sentence. Spell right. Punctuate right. Because this is how you're going to mark yourself above the average person in the workplace, is by your ability to communicate. Promise you, you're going to be furious with me when you get it back. Well, that's what I said. No, it's not exactly what you said when I tell you what the right answer was. Just know that I am getting you ready. You'll do better if you can do well, if you just focus. You'll do better on the second one. You'll do great on the final. Just follow my rules. Say it clearly and succinctly. If you don't know the answer, no matter how hard you try, the harder you try to show me that you know the answer, the more obvious it'll be that you don't know. Six questions. Now, there will be some, I'm not going to tell you how many, but about three of the six would be real easy, just a definition kind of thing. And then three of them about would be a little bit deeper, showing me that you understand a concept. So know that there will be some gimmies in there, and you might want to lick those off first. Not so much gimmies, but they'll be easier to answer. Just give me what I gave you as an explanation. This is based on lectures. Now, where the lectures in the book intersect, well, you'll see it in the book too. But there will be stuff in these that I said only in the lecture. Now, I've had already, surprisingly, about 30 people say, where is that website you talked about with your podcast? Well, that's in the syllabus, which you should have read. ISU-prof, ISU-prof.com. I make those podcasts for you. They're not for my benefit. Well, yeah, they are, because if you say, well, you said, I can pull it right up in the podcast. No, this is what I said. Sometimes that happens against me if I said something, but anyway. Look, stay frosty. If you know your material, this can take you 30 minutes. If you don't know your material, you'll be here until Jesus comes back, writing, trying to figure out what to say here. And personally, I'm going to be out of the way when he comes back, because, I mean, he's got this thing with, you know, what we did a while back. But anyway, look, also, know one thing that I would recommend on that information card, get some of the formulas for ratios, because I'm going to say, well, I wouldn't say, well, here's a number. What does this mean? But I could say, all right, what's the upside to this thing increasing, this ratio increasing? What's the downside to it increasing? You know, so it might be worth your while to have that ratio there to look at. Well, let me see, what did he say about this? Oh, I remember there was an upside when this number gets bigger, it's great, but if it gets bigger, it might not be so great in some situations. That's a kind of more of an analysis kind of question, one of the harder ones that I'm doing here. Now, if you're into education theory, there are two different kinds of assessments. Assessment's a fancy word for a test. There are summative, where I'm trying to find out what you know, and then there's formative, where I'm trying to develop and see where you can go with your knowledge. These are summative, but in their scope, they are formative. In other words, you're showing me what you know, but over the scope of these three written exams, you are formulating a capacity to answer. So I don't expect you to do as great on the first one as I do on the second, or as good on the second as I do on the third, but that still doesn't mean I'm going to cut you slack on this. I'm just going to know that it's going to be harder for you the first time you do it. Now, down to the business of this, I'm going to ask you to tell me what kind of a question I might ask. And I'll tell you, yeah, that's good. And I might tighten it up. Okay, that's very close to something. Now here's a little closer to what. I'm not going to tell you questions verbatim. And don't come into my office and say, I'm going to run a couple answers by you. How do you like them? No, don't do that. I'm not going to pre-grade your test. But you got a question that you think I might ask? Madam, do you have a question you think I might ask? You don't? Have no idea what I've talked. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
What is
the bond? Oh, that's not bad. I'd probably tighten it up, and I'd ask you for the different kinds of debt instruments. I would probably tighten it up so that you showed me that there were different types. That's close. That's close to a mark. She's on a roll. Should we give her another chance for $6,000? Okay. Yeah. Now, that's an interesting question. I wish the hell I had thought of that one, but I didn't. That's a darn good question. I'll have you help me with the next exam, okay? No, but that's actually a very important question. I didn't talk about it much in class, though. It was in the book, and I plan to focus on that more when we get into more deeper into trading strategies. Because even if you've got an arbitrage opportunity, if the transaction cost is too high, you know, I talked about transactions costs with respect to mutual funds and ETFs, where you can have an interesting thing where ETFs you can trade anytime you want. They give you portfolio diversification, but you pay every time. With a mutual fund, you can do it only 4 times a year, but you pay no transactions costs. That's where I brought it up, and it's a very good question. Not one I ask, though. Maybe I'll do that on the next exam. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Excellent. Excellent. Very close. Very close to a question I would ask. By the way, the word that we use is as the term shortens. That's the same thing as saying as it gets closer to maturity. Term is how much life a bond has left. So for example, your term is about 80 years. My term is about 3 years, if I can stay out of the way of my enemies. Okay. But, yeah, I would want to know, what is the price dynamic of a bond as it gets close, as a term approaches zero? Go.
What are the components of interest rate?
Very good. Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I might even tighten it up and say, what is the risk premium? What are the components of the risk premium? That would be a very good question. I might even ask you, can you give me an example of a debt instrument that has only one of the components? That would be sort of like a double, that would be a two-sentence answer you would do there. It would be, what are the components of the risk premium? And can you give me an example of a security that has only one of those three components? Now, I gave you a classic example of one of those a while back. Very good. Work it, yeah.
What are the primary roles of the Federal Reserve?
I would tighten it up, and I might even be much more specific and ask you, tell me how a contractionary open market operation works. How is it done? What is the mechanics of it? That would be two sentences. That's a difficult one. I was trying to talk fast there so that you would. I would ask a question that would be a little more specific. Remember, the three different things that the Fed can do are: it can change the fractional reserve ratio, it can change the discount rate, or it can execute open market operations. I would be much tighter and say, okay, with respect to an open market operation, how would the Federal Reserve contract the money supply? Explain what the Fed would do to actually using an open market operation to claw back liquidity. It would be a tight one, but it would probably take you two sentences. You could probably answer it in one run-on sentence, but it might be better to just do two sentences with that one. You are listening. Yeah, go ahead. Well, let me broaden that one. I will, on the test, give you the numerical information of a yield curve. In other words, 3 month is 0.25%, 6 month is 0.31%. What I would do is I would give you a yield curve, and I would say, what do you see? I won't give you the graphical version of it. You could quickly plot the graph of it, which might not hurt to do. But then I'd say, what are you seeing here? Are you seeing a high arch? What is it? And tell me, show me that you can look at that yield curve's data and see something about the future, the market's expectations about the future in the current period. That's the kind of stuff I want you to be able to come out of my class being able to do. Calculations, yeah, you got to get the calculations, you got to get them damn accurate, but at the same time, if you can't tell me something beyond the calculations, you might as well be in accounting. I didn't mean that. What else? That's a good one. Because you got one, I just described the question. Go.
What's the relationship between interest rates and yields?
How about interest rates and prices? Yeah, there you go, Sparky. He's well, yep, that's the one. Oh, yeah. Almost dead on. I might ask, I might frame the question, well, why are interest rates important to us? Why do they matter? In securities, prices, forecasting, why do we care? Why did I spend so much time talking about interest rates if this is a finance class, not an economics class? Why would I bitch about them so much? Exactly. Okay, what else? Got any more for me? You're getting closer every time. Go.
Something as simple as what's in M2 money supply?
I could, but I didn't ask it. Perfect. It won't be there. See, I'm going to be direct with you. I'm trying to help you focus your studying. No, I don't give out study guides. Your life won't have a study guide. But, well, you can buy Life for Dummies, but that's not really a study guide. Go. No, I won't do that. That's too quantitative. A little too quantitative. A good question. Don't focus on that. Good. Go.
What's the difference between pound stock and preferred stock?
Yes. That's almost dead on. Not quite. That's very close. Know the differences between them. Know the differences between them. There will be something like that on the exam. Go.
Like you did in the previous quiz, you give your mom $9. Is it a bill, note, or bond?
I decided I would go against that because people don't like me talking about their mamas.
Sure.
It's mom issues. It's Oedipus, you know, that whole thing with the Greeks and all. I don't get into that. Yeah.
Do we need to know the difference between a dealer, a broker, and an agent?
No, not for this exam. Not for that comes up again really heavy in the second part of this course, but not for this one. Yeah, as a matter of fact, knowing what I'm not going to ask is as important as knowing what I am going to ask. That means you can just dump some of this stuff. What else? So far, I count 7 that you've gotten pretty close. Go.
The types of liabilities and the types of businesses, partnerships.
Oh, God, I wish I had asked that. I didn't. I didn't. No. Good point, though. Go.
Different types of market shares, like monopoly and...
No. Go.
How book value of equity and market value of equity are related?
Tighten it. I'm going to ask you to explain clearly, in short form, what's the difference between finance and accounting? In terms of valuation, in terms of what we care about, what kind of cost matters in accounting versus what kind of costs matter in finance. I could ask it something straight up, what are two costs in finance that accountants don't even look at? I could ask it that way. Go.
Primary and secondary market.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to ask you to tell me something about the distinguish between the two types of markets, primary and secondary. Now, they talk about this in the book, and I talked a lot about it in class, too. Important stuff, just basic stuff. Go. Oh, yeah. Market cap. I don't want you, let's say, and I'm not saying this is how the question's exact word is. What is the market cap? Don't tell me the formula. Now, if you want to give me the formula, that's fine. Great. But that's not what I'm looking for the answer. Okay? That's not what I'm looking for the answer. What is, if I ask you, what is the market, if I said, what is the market cap? Telling me the formula gets you no points. Telling me what that number means buys you the points. And you could say that in one sentence of about 6 words. No, 8 words. And you got 20% of the exam nailed right there. It's almost Miller time. Okay, or not. Okay, go.
The whole diagram you did with the domestic trading.
Well, that goes to that one that I asked you to show me how open market operations would expand or contract the money supply. I could ask it either way. You just have to explain it. Don't draw me pictures, for God's sake. I had some student, I asked a question, he couldn't answer it, so he drew me a giraffe. You know, what the hell, man? You know, it was a good giraffe, though. But I also had, what happens as a bond approaches the date of maturity? He drew a picture of a golf ball going into a golf course, a golf cup hole, and it said, par for the course. I didn't know whether to flunk his ass or to give him an A. Anyway, what else? Go. Yeah.
What it means if a bond's at par discounted premium?
What would cause it? What would cause that to happen? She asked me about premium, discount, and par. A bond. Why would a bond sell at a premium to par? Why would a bond sell at a discount to par? Now, I'm going to be really nice to you. It might be to your benefit to understand how price is affected by the spread between yield and coupon. Again, it might be worth your while. I'm not saying it is. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. It might be worth your while to know how the price of a bond is affected by the spread between coupon and yield. All other things being held constant. Of course, we know that the spread is irrelevant to a bond that's almost right at the date of maturity. But if you're taking it out from there, that spread has an effect. What is the effect? You would have to explain it to me. Make sure that you would explain it to me both ways. If the spread is coupon over yield, that does one thing to the price. If the spread is yield over coupon, that does something else to the price. Make sure you would say it to me both ways. I'd give you most of the credit if you explained it one way, but I'd give you all of the credit if you explained it to me both ways. Remember, be short, but also make sure that you're thorough. What else? You've done pretty well. You have hit, now I count 11. So I'm going to do some work with you now here for a few minutes. Now, remembering the ones that we've already covered. If I said yes or if I said yes, tighten it up. That's fair game. Among the 20. Here's some more of the 20 that are worth you knowing. What do I mean by residual claim to cash flow? Who has it? And what can a company do with it? What do I mean by residual claim? Who has it? And what can a company do with it? You got cash left over after you've paid your bills. Well, whose is that? And what can the company do with that? Do they donate it to make a wish? Do they shuttle it offshore to the bank accounts of the executives? There are two things they can do with it. What are they? Make sure you know that. Make sure. And make sure that you can answer in short form. Don't go five times around the barn to get to the outhouse. Now, I'm going to ask you about liquidity. Guarantee you. Liquidity has an upside for a corporation. Liquidity has a downside. Y'all better be able to tell me all about that. There are corporations that are swimming in money now. Well, that's wonderful. They got all the money they could need to pay their bills, but there's a dark side to having so much liquidity. Make sure you go back and look carefully at what the darkness is. Don't just say, well, liquidity, too much liquidity is bad. Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you credit for that. No. Tell me why it's bad. If it is bad, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm trying to bluff you. Maybe I'm trying to get you to tell me something that's not true. I wouldn't do that. Yes, I would. God, I'm such a bastard. Okay. Okay. I might ask you what financial ratio is important for what? I might say, okay, there's something that I would want to look at if I wanted to know this about a corporation. Make sure you know what those formulas, the formula itself you can write down. What I want you to be able to show me in this exam is that you understand why that, where you would use that, why that would be an important formula. So I might say, all right, there's a ratio that I would really be happy to see at some, or there's a ratio that would scare the hell out of me if I saw it at a certain level. So I'm going to ask you a question about a ratio. And it's going to be a ratio that tells me either something really good, or it could be a number that tells me something really bad. Now, in a separate question, I'm going to tell you about a ratio that everyone loves to talk about, the higher the better. And I told you that that's not always true. I told you that's not always true. And I even told you a real-life story about an industry that had that ratio looking great, 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 better, 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 year over year, decade over decade, until it looked horrible, the consequence of making that ratio get better and better. I'm going to ask you about that. I will ask you something about that. Or at least that's one of the 20 possibilities. Let me put it that way. Make sure you understand that there, it's almost with any ratio that there, you can't just say the bigger the better. You know, sometimes that's a wonderful thing until it's not. One example would be net margin. Well, their net margin has been going up year over year over year. Aren't they the greatest thing? Wall Street loves themselves, that company. Well, you know, one of the ways that you can get your net margin to go up year over year over year is just keep paying your workers less and less and firing them and outsourcing to China and all of that until the day that you have ruined your company because everything that you had built in the United States for a century is now over in China, where it's just going to hell in a handbasket. But your profits were great. It's like the story I told you about the turnaround specialist. He said to the board of directors, I can make this company profitable every year until we close the doors in bankruptcy. Profitability is not always the only thing that matters. And that's something I want you to be able to tell me. I taught you about this, that sometimes ratios can get too good. And I'll ask you about one that can get too good. And why it could, and I'll ask you to tell me why it could get too good. We talked about risk premium. Make sure you know what that risk premium is. There are components to it. Make sure you know the components. And remember, we talked about how different interest rates carry different balances of those three. So make sure that you can tell me something that would have the risk premium, but would have only one piece of the risk premium, one of the three pieces. And yes, there are three. I just let that out. I have not formally, but I have kept showing it to you, which is the way I like to do things before I formally introduce it. I'm going to ask you about beta. I'm going to ask you. I don't want a formula. Don't go on Wikistupedia or Investostupedia. But I do want a formula. But I don't want a formula, but I do want you to be able to tell me what beta, something about beta. Now, let me start this. True or false? There is a good beta and there is a bad beta. Is that true or is that false? Madam, is that true or false? Huh? False. Say false. That's right, yeah. Beta is, well, there. I suppose you could say, well, yeah, a beta of 18.6 will make anyone's hind leg go up and down. But beta is good or bad based upon the individual investor's choices about risk. So for you, you are an extreme risk taker. A veritable animal who drives a motorcycle that says mom, and then mom is crossed out because mom is passed on. She moved in with some guy over in Poughkeepsie. But, I mean, what's good for you might not be good for you. You, sir, are a mild-mannered man. By day, you work for a newspaper in Gotham City. By night, you go into phone booths and come out wearing a Superman outfit. And provided the cops aren't around to arrest you for being a weirdo, you go out and fight crime. Of course, crime whips your ass because you're really not Superman, but, you know, where the hell was I? Bear with me. I need to show you something important here. But while I'm doing that, I'm going to go through some words that would be worth it for you. Money. Interest rates. Term of a bond. Residual claim. Primary versus secondary. Return on equity. Beta. Market capitalization. Yield curve. Liquidity. Be careful. I might try. In the 20 is going to be one about risk and return. Don't let me bluff you out, okay? Don't let me bluff you out about risk and return. Because return doesn't actually matter. And if you say return, I will know that you don't quite understand. What is it that matters? It's not return, it's something else that matters. What is it that actually matters? Do you know? Make sure you know by the time of the exam. Return doesn't matter in finance. What does matter? Well, wait a minute. Finance is all about your return on equity, your return on assets, your return on your portfolio, return on investment. Why is he saying that return really doesn't matter much in finance? We say it, but we really mean something a little bit deeper. It's instead of return, it's two words, something return. What is it? Woman? Sir? Oh. Yeah. That's it? You are really, really smart. Wait, Chicago Bulls. Gee, oh well, whatever. Now, I want to warn you about something here. I'm going to do this right now so I can get past it.
What did he say?
He said expected. I cannot tell about the future. I have no crystal ball. I can't tell you what's going to happen. But what I can tell you is an expectation. That's why inflation doesn't matter. I don't care what inflation has already done. What I care about is this, is an expectation. Now, this, by the way, if you go on some website like Investopedia or Wikipedia, you could have a cat telling you what to do, what to say. But I tell you right now, it's not just any cat, it's my cat. That's Phineas. Phineas actually answers students' questions, and he knows he's wrong, and see how he's smiling? He likes telling you wrong answers. Okay? So you remember that when you're studying. You ask some stupid website like Wikipedia, which is run, everything there is written by really weird human scum. Investopedia is written by people who can't find a job, so they tell other people that they know what finance is about. Don't ask Phineas, because you don't want Phineas to smile, because that means Phineas has just nailed someone else with a bad grade. Okay? Enough of that. I just want to make sure that you know that Phineas is there watching, waiting for you to have your shot. Okay? You remember that smile. He won't even let me mute him. Anyway. Hi, Phineas. Don't go to those websites. They will mislead you. Wikipedia is one of the most unauthoritative. Some studies have found that 80% of the information on Wikipedia is false. In their finance sections, virtually everything they say has something about it that's wrong. Don't let Phineas tell you right answers, okay? Bye, Phineas. I'll see you in a while. Now, back to it. Other words. Something you blew it the last time. I'm going to give you another chance here, okay? You are in the city. Everything's looking good. But then, all of a sudden, you see everyone running the opposite way to you. People are going, ah! And you turn a corner, people are knocking you. You're like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go this way. And around the corner, there's Godzilla. So you turn around and you decide, well, you know, they seem to know where to go. Okay, so you run away. And Godzilla tears up, is knocking down buildings. Meanwhile, you've gone to some place that's safe with all the other people. What do we call that in investing? You're still stuck on the. You got a clue? I saw a picture once of where a jet airliner had crashed. There was a big ball of fire. About 30 yards away from impact point, there was a baked dog. I mean, the dog was baked, but he was pointing the opposite way to the plane. So he was obviously trying to run away. He didn't quite make it. And so it was a baked dog. Now do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it flight to quality?
Absolutely, flight to quality. The dog was trying to leave because there was no quality there.
Of flight.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
Oh, my. I'm trying to. Whatever. I was being a little more obtuse with you, with Godzilla, you know. But at the same time, the point here is that there's a phenomenon you should know about. You should understand it. You should think about that. I've covered almost everything. Oh, one last one that would be worth your while. Now, I'm not saying every one of these is going to be on the exam. I've covered 20 possibilities in this, in what I've presented here. There is one that I haven't, 19, there's one I haven't brought up yet. Early in the course, I showed you monetary aggregates. I showed you the charts that I had built from Federal Reserve data. I showed you why the crisis happened. I showed it to you. You saw the graph. You saw the three monetary aggregates. Even though the Fed had stopped publishing one of them, I had brought in the calculations from shadow government statistics to show you what it would have been if the government had kept publishing it. You saw the three as we were approaching 2008. You saw one of those that was telling you a really, really bad story that pretty much covers why the markets buckled in September of 2008. You should remember that. I might ask that on the exam. What was it, what was happening? What did I show you? What was the consequence of the Federal Reserve's... Well, I don't want to be harsh. What was the consequence of the Federal Reserve's batshit insane monetary policy regime leading into 2008? What did I show you? You remember that. There's a lecture right on that that you can see. Matter of fact, I'll put the link in the scrolling sidebar so you can see that graph again. Would you like me to do that? Okay, great. I'll put that on the... this podcast will be up by 7 p.m. tonight, and I'll put that link to that picture so you can see it. Go.
It was about September 15th, 2008.
Yeah, it was September 15th of 2008 was when it actually was seen. But it had been building for years before that. For at least 3-4 years before that, this had been building up, this crisis. It was... No. It had to do with monetary aggregates. Had to do with one of the monetary aggregates. It's one of those things where it happened on September the 15th. But that's sort of like one of those things. Trying to think. I've got to find a specific kind of person. You. Have you ever had one of those zits that was like a third eye? You know, you haven't? Well, let me tell you. I had one of those. It blinked. I mean, it was so big. And it just came out of nowhere. But you see, it didn't. It had been happening underneath the surface. I felt something happening in my brain. I felt these tentacles reaching around. It was just when the eye came out. It was kind of cool, though, because, you know, stereoscopic vision? Imagine threescopic vision. That was, you know, like awesome. And I could wink at people while these two eyes were looking at them without winking. It was, anyway. Try to get back on focus here. The thing, though, is that the crisis that was shown to the average American, the one that the talking heads were on about, they can't possibly be shown the dynamic that was going on. You know it. We just have to make sure that at our level, in our educational knowledge, our professions, we can protect those people from these kinds of insane things happening to the extent possible. And so that they don't see that crisis happen on that one day. So that they know that there was a process behind it. There's always a process. Things don't come out of nowhere. And this is one that you saw, and I showed it to you, and I'll put that picture back up, and then you can remember that lecture and what I was showing you. Okay, one more time through the meat grinder, just to make sure. Make sure you know about money. Know everything about money. Okay? Not all money is dollar bills. I'll give you a hint. Okay? Make sure you know why we talk about interest rates so much. Why I have gone on. I've talked. I've bleated. I've farted about interest rates. Know why that matters in finance. Make sure you know about the interrelationships in a bond. The relationship between the yield to coupon spread, the relationship between the price of the bond and the term of the bond, how much time it has left. Make sure you understand that. Make sure you know what I mean by residual claim. Make sure you know what a corporation can do with it on behalf of those who have that claim. Make sure you know about costs. What are costs in finance that they never talk about? Or they can't. I shouldn't do that to accountants. They have to follow rules, rigid rules. In finance, we don't have to. We can talk about things that actually drive the future. Make sure that you know some of those things that matter to us in finance. One of those things that matters to us is not what you do. It's what you could have done instead, okay? Now, if your life were a big loser party, this is the best. I wouldn't need to talk about it. But in your case, tonight, you get a call. Ring, 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 ring. Hello?
Hi, I'm a talent agent in New York City, and I saw your face on Facebook. We would like to offer you a $500,000 contract. If you can leave today, leave tonight. We've got a ticket for you. We'll fly you down to the Bahamas, and you'll do a photo shoot down there with Taylor Swift. She will show some midriff for you, if that's okay. Okay. And then once you've shaken that off, then we'll bring you back up for a photo shoot in Europe. But you got to drop everything and join us now, and then we'll talk about a contract. We're looking at about $2.3 million a year for you to be boy toy for the Cougars. Yes.
No, sir, I've got to go to class. Professor Thea will kick my butt. Is that what you're going to say? No. You're going to say, hello, Professor C? Might be. Bye. You see, because the opportunity cost of being here skyrocketed for you. Right now, you don't have a whole lot of options. The military is an option for you, but I don't recommend it because they didn't tell me that, you know, they shoot back at you. I mean, what the hell, man? You know, what was that all about? But the point here being that, what am I talking about here? What am I talking about? Opportunity cost. It matters to us. You can't write about it in accounting statements. And yet it is a dominant, a powerful driver of our decision making. And when companies refuse to look at opportunity cost, they can almost always guarantee you, they will make bad decisions if they don't look at what they could have done instead of what they did. Market cap, liquidity, open market operations, yield curves, primary and secondary markets, money markets and capital markets. Financial ratios, just understand what they're telling you. What would be a number that would absolutely, what financial ratio would you see a number in that would make you absolutely have a heart attack? Whoop, that's it. There's one that would be, right. It's the game stopper, okay? So I might very well ask you for that game stopper. And don't go sending me email, what was that game stopper? No, I'm not going to answer that. Do I look stupid? Actually, I shouldn't say that because everyone holds, oh, I know, yeah, you do. No. Risk and return. Don't let me bluff you. If you say the greater the risk, the greater the return, you get zero. You get zero for the question. Wait, isn't that what you said? And no, it's not. You missed something, which shows you don't understand what matters. We can't see the future perfectly. Beta, flight to quality. Oh, something I haven't brought up. Why would a company issue borrow instead of selling stock to finance projects? What's the upside of borrowing instead of doing an IPO? Let's just do it any term. What's the downside of borrowing versus issuing equity to finance capital projects? Remember, I'm saying capital projects, so the capital kind of implies a long-term thing. Okay. What's the risk? Ow, God, that hurt like hell. I'm going to have to use some Rogaine to get that over that. Okay. Wait, I hit my head. I'm actually thinking go Cubs. I shouldn't say that. Yeah, I should. Risk premium. And also know what the dark side would be. I talked about a couple of ratios that can get better and better until the zombie apocalypse is precipitated by it. Make sure you know about that. And always write succinctly for me. Full sentences, proper punctuation and spelling. And don't ever start with, I think the answer, I feel, I believe the answer. No, don't do that. Just say what you have to say and be done with it. Do you have any questions for me? I'll see you on Wednesday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.